Hello baseball fans, and welcome to another episode of the British Baseball Podcast. And on today's show, it's coming to you during Mental Health Awareness Week here in the UK. I've seen a lot of positivity and effort to promote kindness and well-being throughout the British baseball community. Lots of raffles and giveaways, stories being shared to try and keep high spirits and a positive buzz around what's possibly the strangest scenario I think we have ever been placed in. Now, I'm joined today by two special guests. Both of them are passionate advocates for mental health. First is a gent who's recently landed on these shores and works with BSUK. He's been championing mental health online for some time now, and he is Mr. Chris Knobloch. Welcome to the show, Chris. And joining Chris today is the editor of Athlete's Voice, a website and blog where they write about athletes and mental health, and their goal is to end the stigma in sports. He also plays for Norwich Iceni Baseball Club and the Finnish National Baseball Team. He is Andreas Fopp. As I said there in the opening, we are talking about mental health this episode. But before we get into that, Chris, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey in baseball?
Sure, absolutely. I grew up playing baseball. I'm originally from Boston area in Massachusetts, a Red Sox fan. I grew up in a house. My dad is a Yankees fan, so we had a rivalry built into our family. I played baseball from the age of 8 all the way up to the age of 18. On various teams. When I was 18, I tried to walk on at the University of Maine, which is a Division I school, didn't make it. And that's when I transitioned into broadcasting both baseball and ice hockey. Once I graduated college, I worked in professional ice hockey for 4 years for a couple different teams, then caught on with an Atlantic League of Professional Baseball team, which is an independent league in New Britain, Connecticut, called the Bees, where I was their inaugural broadcaster. And over the course of a couple of years, I broadcast just under 300 games for that team. And now in my role with BSUK, part of what I'm going to be doing is broadcasting once we can get back on the field, as well as playing again, which I'm very excited for, in addition to some of the other things I do around for the organization, like commercial and marketing, social media, that type of thing. So I've been a baseball fan for a long time. I've been very fortunate that I've had the opportunity to work in baseball, in professional baseball, and with quite a number of former major league players. And it's been a very varied experience, to use very twice, but it's been a diverse experience of everywhere from college baseball to me playing in Little League to watching 13-year major league vets pitch in a stadium full of 5,000 fans. So it's all over the place, but certainly a wild ride and a fun one at that.
Yeah, back to baseball, what's the most fun one that you've had?
That's really hard. One of my favorite memories was in 2002. My family went to a random Red Sox game at Fenway, and it was when Derek Lowe threw a no-hitter. That was amazing and obviously completely unexpected. I remember that for a long time. I've been fortunate, and this is actually a weird one. I got to walk on the field at Fenway Park, but it was for an ice hockey event when I was with the Boston Blades of the Canadian Women's Hockey League. I also got to broadcast at Fenway Park, but again, it was ice hockey. It was the University of Maine versus the University of New Hampshire in what was called Frozen Fenway back in 2012. So I've yet to broadcast a baseball game at Fenway, but I've been there for ice hockey twice, which is very weird.
Yeah, broadcasting at Fenway, and it's nothing to do with baseball.
Yeah, it was very funny. We were actually in the visiting announce booth at Fenway, and so it was January 7th, 2012, and the reason why that's important is that it was about 16, 17 degrees Celsius, somewhere in the mid-60s Fahrenheit, and it was warm. So it was baseball weather, but again, it was ice hockey.
That's brilliant. Andreas, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and your baseball history?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess like Chris, it's safe to say I've been a little bit all over the place. My heritage stems from both the the U.S. and then over in Germany, I spent a number of years as well. My parents actually moved over as teachers from the U.S. when I was just 4 years old. And so I kind of grew to Germany is my second home in the span over the span of roughly 15 years. And while I was there, played a little bit of t-ball in my younger years, but then towards my formative years, I kind of got a bit of a hankering for playing a sport during the spring. And it just so happened that our school, being an international school over in Germany, had a baseball team. I was kind of amazed at first that, you know, we had a baseball field to begin with, but you quickly get stuck into it. And we actually had a coach who was a former Cincinnati Red Scout. So he knew what he was talking about. And he was incredibly helpful in sort of not only bringing the passion and energy for a lot of players, but also a good talking to when maybe we didn't lay down the bunt right, or we swung and missed at a ball that was way outside the strike zone. So he was immensely helpful on that level. But of course, over the years throughout high school, as you do, you have a few people that come and go, but baseball was consistent, and it was a really solid rock for me to lean on, especially when I was deciding on a university. And that's when I came to the UK back in 2014 and was at the University of East Anglia for 5 years. So then, as of last year, then finally graduated and have been a part of the Norwich Iceni, the local baseball club, for the last 3 or so years since its inception. And I mean, it's been a wild ride. We've already had one championship back over in 2017 when we went undefeated in our inaugural season at single A, then got quickly promoted to double A and realized how, I think, out of our depth we were in terms of ascending up the ranks. Since then, it's just been one fun season after the next. And you never really quite know what each season is going to hold. And I think that's a big part of the beauty of British baseball, is we've had a great number of characters come through the ranks and really help grow our ball club over here.
Lovely. It's got a really unusual name as well, hasn't it, the Norwich team? We'll talk a little bit off air about it. Do you want to share us the origins of the Iceni team?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I hope I've got this 100% right, but when we were originally deciding on the name, a number of people on the committee were looking to sort of bring the region's heritage, East Anglian heritage, into it. And so we thought something with sort of a warrior connection might be something interesting to involve here. And that's when we decided upon Norwich Iceni, the Iceni being a local tribe that had inhabited Norfolk quite some time ago.
So let's get into the meat and veg of this episode. You both have superb websites with lots of different articles on there. Which ones are you most proud of, and what are they about? Andreas, if you want to start us off on that one.
Yeah, absolutely. When it comes down to articles, Athlete's Voice was conceived originally just to talk about mental health, really, in association with sports, because I'd kind of noticed that there was a little bit of an absence of it. Like, unless you're really digging for particular articles, you're not going to readily run across athletes talking about the inner psychology or their thought process so much as the visual accomplishments that they have. And so for me, I kind of wanted to add a little bit of my own spin to it and write not only through my own experience as someone that has struggled with mental health, depression specifically, and I wanted to add my voice to the fray just in the hope that it might spark some conversation around sort of this whole stigma in sports is a hashtag that I use. And get people really, I don't know, just to sort of embrace mental health a little bit more readily, especially within the sports media environment.
Yeah,
Really good.
So for me, I'll be honest, I was not a mental health advocate really in any way up until I finished up my first job in Portland, Maine. So I graduated from university in 2012 from the University of Maine. And at the time, my primary area of focus was ice hockey. But I didn't start speaking out about mental health until after I had wrapped up my two-year tenure with the Portland Pirates, who at the time were the American Hockey League affiliate of the Phoenix Coyotes. Now, that wasn't struggling with mental health. I had been struggling with my health since the age of 13, which is when my parents got divorced. And it was always, it manifested itself in insomnia. Primarily, but there was the anxiety and the depression that would accompany that was certainly very tough. And the reason why I ended up finally writing about it and posting about it started with an initiative in North America called Bell Let's Talk, which originally started in Canada. And it was a day every year, one day where Bell, Canadian telecoms company, would donate 5 cents for every tweet using the hashtag Bell Let's Talk, with the goal of ending the stigma around mental health. And the first couple of years they did it, there wasn't a lot of uptake until National Hockey League players got involved and they started amplifying the message. And they were the ones who started bringing more light to it. My first 2 years in Portland were incredibly stressful. We were an understaffed team. We were under constant relocation. In fact, my second year in Portland, the team moved from Portland to Lewiston, which is a town about an hour north, and we had to commute from Portland every single game day into an arena that was 60, almost 70 years old. In fact, and this is a quick aside, that arena is famous for the Muhammad Ali fight with the Phantom Punch, was up in Maine, called the Lewiston Civic Center. So that experience really brought me to the edge. I was getting somewhere between 12 and 18 hours of sleep a week. I was working 20-hour days. And at the end of my tenure there, I left that job because I felt that I was underpaid, but more importantly, I had nothing left to give. I could not continue working in that environment. The team had just been bought, and rather than work with the new ownership, it was just time for me to do something else. Now, I thought it was going to be easier for me to find a job in sports after that. Turns out it was a much longer process, but that's a little bit of a different story. And at the end of my tenure with the Pirates, while I still had health insurance, which in the UK comes with the NHS, but in the US is tied to your employment, I finally went to a doctor for the first time and said, look, I've had this problem forever. What can be done? And she took one look at me and said, you should have been on medication for the last 10 years. I had no idea. I had gone to therapy when I was younger. It had not worked for me. So we tried a medication in 2014, and it failed miserably. It was just an absolute disaster. I was working in a summer camp with my now fiance, and the medication caused me to not remember things. It caused me to be sarcastic. I had a short fuse. It was just a disaster. And so at the end of that summer, I went back to my doctor. I said, this isn't working. It took people telling me that it didn't work for me to figure out that it wasn't working. And she said, okay, let's try this. And the other medicine was night and day. It completely changed my life. The anxiety was controllable for the first time. The depression was controllable for the first time. The insomnia got better. It's still something I deal with every day, but it was a life changer. And that was the moment. That was really the moment where I realized that the biggest mistake I made wasn't getting help, but it was waiting as long as I did. And because at the time, I was very on top of my social media to a borderline religious extent. Thankfully, I'm not at that level anymore because it was really obsessive. I figured that the best thing that I could do to help end the stigma of mental health and sports was to talk about what had happened to me and to urge people not to wait to get help. And so that's really where I started writing about it and talking about it and discussing it on social media. That ended up with me posting items on my own website. When it comes to mental health issues and companies promoting them or organizations, I've always been one to volunteer to speak out not ever expecting anyone else to, but because, one, I'm a broadcaster and it's in my nature to talk, but two, because I really feel that the best thing that you can do is if you found a way that helps you is to encourage other people to reach out and get that help that they're looking for. So that's why at the beginning of Mental Health Awareness Week, I was the one to do a video on DSUK talking about my experience and urging people to get help in the hopes that they would do so. Not because I'm an expert on the subject or anything, but because I wanted people to see that I'm just a regular person and I waited a long time and I didn't need to. And that's really my most important takeaway from a mental health discussion is that help is available.
Honestly, a lot of that resonates very much so. And I think the crucial take-home message is, as you said, that with these stories, and there are different ways to communicate them. And honestly, I will be the first to say, you know, both of your medias are vastly different than the one that I choose to communicate my messages. I feel like both of you deserve a huge round of applause when it comes to being so forward facing with your messages. And I feel very strongly about that because it really does take quite a bit of effort and willingness on your part to be so public about that. Because for me, I am a little bit more of an introvert when it comes to writing about my own struggles, which are chronicled online, but purposefully not in a video, nor on a podcast. So this is very much a sort of out of my comfort experience.
I know, and I understand. And in fact, I wouldn't necessarily encourage other people to do what I do. Talking about mental health is great, but broadcasting it is not for everyone. And I completely understand that I'm rare in doing so and that most people aren't comfortable doing it. So it was very kind of you both to say that resonates. But if people aren't comfortable doing what I'm doing to discuss mental health, that is completely and totally understandable. I am the exception, not the rule. And I think that's a very important distinction to make. Mental health and discussing mental health is not necessarily a public thing for most people, and that's totally okay.
Yeah, I agree. And I think a lot of people that I know of have been quite vocal about too with their willingness to listen. The important thing is that, like you said, then everyone can go about it their own way. But just talking about it can be helpful, which is why the direct messages for British Baseball Podcast on Twitter will always be open if anybody wants to. I don't have answers, but if it's just people want to offload or just have a concern, there's somebody there at the other end.
And this, as part of Mental Health Awareness Week, my boss at Baseball Softball UK, Joelle Watkins, did a video as well. And she volunteers with Samaritans, the anti-suicide charity here in the UK. They're always available to talk as well. Their information's available online. They have an email address as well if you don't want to talk over the phone, which I think is fantastic. And so there are many different ways to approach mental health. And I know I talked about how I take a medication. Medication isn't necessarily for everyone either. It was my solution, but for some people it could be therapy, it could be other techniques. There is no one size fits all either. And I think that's part of what makes mental health so tricky. Exactly. Is that there is no magic bullet.
Yeah, and it's a really important disclaimer. And part of the reason why I think while we're talking about this, we also need to be aware that, you know, there's so many different conditions that it is a bit of a struggle to sort of, when you're talking about your own personal experiences, it does take on different forms. And I know that, for instance, one of my pieces chronicles how one of the things that I love most in this world was very difficult for me both in 2017 and 2018 when I was really struggling with depression. And that was just throwing a baseball, you know, something that is so fundamentally simple was complicated by my frustration and my sort of desire to be perfect, really, sort of to be this individual on the mound that was infallible, and that I really wanted to channel everything that I still had in me into baseball. And it ended up blowing up in my face. And to be quite honest, I realized that maybe I just need to loosen the throttle. I need to talk some things through with someone, and I'm no longer on medication now, but I speak semi-regularly with a therapist, and that helps an absolute boatload. I mean, she's been incredibly helpful, and I'm very thankful to be in the situation that I am in terms of being able to talk to someone that is as caring as that.
It's interesting that you brought up throwing, because I can bring up one of my, well, least favorite stories from growing up about baseball was former Yankee second baseman Chuck Knobloch. Am I related to him? I don't really know. His name is spelled differently than mine, but about three generations back, so is my family name. We can't tell, and I purposefully have never looked it up. But he was Rookie of the Year in the early 90s. He won four World Series rings with the New York Yankees. And then in the year 2001, he lost the ability to throw a baseball from second to first. It was a case of the yips. Yeah. Was not mechanical. It was a mental block. So they moved him to left field. He played one more season for the Kansas City Royals, and he retired. Wow. So the mental health is not just for those of us who could not make it to Division I baseball in the NCAA in college. That was an athlete who had won multiple awards and multiple World Series. He had made millions of dollars, and all of a sudden, he couldn't make the most simple throw that he had done probably millions of times in his life.
It's funny you say that about because, again, mental health doesn't really care, does it, about how much you earn or what job you've got. And one thing that really grates me is there's an incident with a football player over here suffering with mental health issues, and he stepped away from the game, and he's a Premier League footballer. And the amount of people I heard say, what's he got to be worried about? He earns millions of pounds a year. What mental health issues can he possibly have? And the answer, he can have whatever mental health issues he wants. He's got them. And the fact that he earns 18 million times more than what we can, but just the fact that he earns what he earns doesn't mean that he can't have mental health problems.
Your mental health is not affected by your weekly income. Now, it can have an impact on your mental health. Certainly, if you don't have job security, that can be difficult. For a few years I'm employed, and that's incredibly difficult. But just because you're making money doesn't mean your mental health issues go away. Sometimes it can actually exacerbate them. So, you know, you are not protected by piles of cash from mental health issues. That certainly not.
No, I think that if you look at a lot of documentaries, and I know that The Last Dance has been a particularly popular Netflix documentary or Netflix biopic of sorts. But I mean, if you look at how they characterize some of the players, and you look at, for instance, Dennis Rodman and his personality, you wouldn't be the first person to say, well, he's definitely got some stuff going on, but he's so defiant in who he wants to be that I think that speaks more volumes than anyone saying, well, he's maybe not all there. You know, he wants to do what Dennis Rodman wants to do. And I think that when we talk about mental health in a professional sporting environment, that often is crucial, that you allow players to be really who they are in essence, because by suppressing individuality, you're losing a big part of what makes them who they are.
It's what makes them great. I mean, exactly. If Michael Jordan was not Michael Jordan, then we wouldn't be watching a documentary called The Last Dance. nor would he have won six championships. Michael Jordan's mentality is what got him there. It is the essence of who he is. And mental health can be a part of that, certainly. When Jordan took a break from the game of basketball to go play baseball, and after his father's passing, there were instances where he lost his killer instinct and he had to go find it again. And now, is that the same thing as anxiety or depression? Not exactly, but is that part of the mental health picture? Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that's one of the crucial things that, you know, I'm going to insert a shameless little plug here that I do like to write about when it comes to professional athletes, because as I mentioned earlier, there's not a whole lot of content out there when it comes to players specifically that have been open about their mental health issues, or at least it could be that there's more information, but maybe I'm just not picking up on it. But there was a piece that struck me as a little bit different when Gianluigi Buffon came out in 2019 and mentioned that, you know, he'd been struggling with a depressive episode while he was sort of at the pinnacle of his sporting peak. You know, he was at the very top. He'd been coming off multiple seasons of world-class football with Juventus, Turin, and he'd been excelling. And so for all intents and purposes, like you mentioned, Chris, you should be happy. And Matt, you know, you say that money should not be viewed as sort of the measure of one's success when it comes to sport. Absolutely not. In this case, Buffon would rather, you know, he would have rather walked away, and he needed a break. And in my piece that I wrote, which definitely has to be one of my favorite pieces, because it was kind of this dissection of what made Buffon tick at the time. It talks about how all he needed was something different, something new, something refreshing. And I think that dialogue, that narrative can really be placed in a lot of mental health conversations, especially, you know, when it comes to sport at the amateur level. If you've got a lot of individuals that are maybe struggling to play a sport, whether it's because of injury or simply the repetitive nature of it, and they no longer get the same enjoyment out of it, try something new. See whether or not you get that energizing thought of, God, this is really something special that I've stumbled upon here, and I might want to explore it a little bit further. That's how we get a lot of guys that come over and practice with us and say that they've been playing football or cricket for, you know, 10, 15 years, and they just want to give baseball a whirl. And sure enough, some of them stick, some of them don't. But the main premise is that what might be driving you a little bit mad about one sport might be entirely fixable by moving to another.
Great point.
Yeah. There's been studies that show that the links between mental health and sports being improved. But what do you think is about baseball specifically that is good for promoting mental health or making you feel better?
I think the sport of baseball, from my perspective, and coming originally from the U.S. And having worked in the U.S. minor league, independent minor league system, the thing about baseball is that it's a game that requires a lot of thought, especially at that very high level, that pro level. And you can get consumed by that thought, but that's sometimes a blessing. It gives you something to singularly focus on. It's not a short game. It takes some time. It forces you to concentrate on one thing for a certain period of time. You don't know when it's going to end, which I think is one of the great things about the game of baseball. And it's one of the reasons why I don't like all of this pace of play stuff, is that I like the open-endedness of baseball because there's no planning around it. It is, you've started a game and you're going to play until the game's finished. And there are all these scenarios that can come up within the game of baseball, whether there's a runner on second and two outs and you're down by a run and you need to get that runner home. So how do you hit the ball? To the chess match between the pitcher and the catcher. All of that can provide a welcome distraction, not just physically, but mentally. So that I like about the game of baseball when you're playing it. And here in the UK, where we have a wide variety of different levels of baseball teams that play across the country, it's all people who love the game doing it because they love the game. And that type of passion, that type of like-mindedness in that community, if anyone's ever been in the British Baseball Clubhouse Facebook group, you can see the passion with every single post. And they're not playing. They're just talking about the game, normally the British game, but also Major League Baseball. It gives you something that is tangible, that you can talk about, that it may seem silly because in the grand scheme of things, you know, talking about sport or sport in general is not ever the be-all end-all of life, as much as we all would like to think it is. But that passion and that thought and the fact that these people are coming together because they love the game and they want to grow the game and they've built this such a strong community, that's what really gets me about the sport. It's welcoming and it's inclusive. And once you're in, and there are limitless things to discuss and think about and break down and improve upon. And especially during this lockdown where we can't physically play the game as we know it, that mental aspect of baseball, the ability to throw on, you know, say, the All-Star game, the Major League Baseball All-Star game from 1999 and just break it down and watch it. It provides such a welcome distraction from news and everything that's going on. And sometimes that's just what you need. So baseball having all these different facets available, from watching the professional game to talking about improving your own game to talking even just talking about the logistics of playing baseball in the United Kingdom. There's so many different items and all of them can help improve or even just distract from some of the daily mental health grind. So that's really what I think is interesting in particular about the sport and something that's really particular to the UK sport.
I mean, you covered a whole lot of ground there, Chris. I mean, first off, I have a
tendency to yap on. It's just my broadcaster nature.
I think that's brilliant because, I mean, when we talk about baseball specifically, I feel like it's a game that it gets me outside. And I know for a lot of people, that can be a bit of a struggle. You know, if you're, especially during our current situation, but it is one of those things where if you have a tendency to, like me, spend a certain number of hours simply typing away or being inside the house for a given period of time throughout the day, it can really breathe some life into that entire week. You can plan a couple of hours slots and just know that you're going to be active and outdoors enjoying baseball. And for me, that's been a huge part of it. You know, I think if you acknowledge some of the mental health literature that's out there, the fact is that mental health conditions can sometimes feel as though they're taking control of you to the extent that you become sort of paralyzed in a state of neglect, not only about yourself, but a neglect for others. And I feel that the social aspect and the fact that you do get outside, talk with other people, and simply enjoy the game, it really, I know for me, breathes a whole lot of life into my sort of my seasonal habits, if you will.
Mm.
good point. I found from my point of view, since I had my brain injury, baseball had helped me with my hand-eye coordination, which had been really important. It's one of the things that I was really worried about when, because I'd seen improvements in myself personally through just a couple of training sessions. And when it was taken away, one of the first things that happened to me is my anxiety kicked in and my ability to overthink just took over, and I played out all the worst case scenarios in my head, and I was so worried I was going to lose everything. But I think one thing that I've learned from it is to try and keep myself active, meditate when I can to try and cope with the negative emotions that I feel. It's okay to have them and like let them happen and just acknowledge that they are just thoughts and I don't have to dwell on them, but also keeping myself active if and when baseball season starts up again in the country, that I'm ready to go. And even just watching what I eat, my diet, which again, feeling good about myself, eating the right foods, not eating rubbish food, which is going to make me feel sluggish and horrible and motivation any more than it can be at times. And I feel like the little things that I'm doing at home during lockdown to try and keep positive and keep my energy levels up, just in case someone says, I feel like a firefighter on call, just ready for action. That's what I'm trying to prime myself to be. So any little things I can do. I mean, I'm quite fortunate that I have a house. I mean, it'd probably be a different story for us if I was living in a flat without access to like a garden or something. But, you know, like you said then, Andreas, one thing I was really looking forward to was going back outside and just being with the park in Manchester in Wythenshire. I actually cycled to it today. It took me 45 minutes to get there. And just standing there in the field and just looking around and just seeing where the team would sit from last season, and just being around nature and just outdoors and such a lovely surrounding environment. And it made me sad for a bit, but only because I was missing it, you know, and I think everyone's missing.
Yeah.
Missing baseball.
They are. I mean, I can relate on that level where we've had a couple of the guys post in our Facebook chat and, you know, their photos of our home field. And I mean, it does hit a little certain spot, and you get a little bit, sad there for a bit. But the fact that this state hopefully will not be permanent is really has been a driving force for me keeping my head up as much as I can. I've been trying a few different things when and where possible in order to add a little bit of diversity into my daily activities, and that's helped immensely as well. And I think that there is something to say about a daily routine, because some people simply function better when they have a routine. Now, I've been led to believe that is the best way, and both of my parents function very much on a routine basis. But I have to say that the fact that I have this degree of freedom and this privilege to be able to do essentially what I want when I want has really lended itself to me being able to work out and explore baseball a little bit more fully. Like you were saying there, Chris, there's so many different things to dissect within that sport, and that's what makes it so great. Mm-hmm. There's different aspects to a game that we all love, and that's part of, I think, the brilliance of having podcasts like these. They're little things that really add value to a lot of people's lives in ways that maybe at first glance you might not expect. And it really speaks volumes that you've found the time and you've found the passion, Matt, to continue this as much as you have, with the variety of guests and topics that you've gotten involved with. That also speaks volumes about, you know, being able to stay afloat during tough times like these.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
There was a weird little YouTube video that I happened across not too long ago, and the title of it was "Why Baseball in the UK Sucks," and I kind of took that personally.
Yeah.
And I'm not even from the UK. I thought, what does this guy know? Like, I've never seen him on a baseball field here in the UK. I feel like in some ways we're not being given the credit maybe that we're sort of due. You know, I could not agree more.
I completely agree with that. And you know, it's always a shame when in the UK and even in the US when they're like, oh, they don't play baseball in the UK. Well, if they don't play baseball in the UK, why am I here? But it does bring up an interesting thing about how people who are ignorant will usually have very strong opinions based on absolutely nothing. And the issue with that is that watching a video titled like that sometimes can rile you up, or if you're feeling down, that can bring you down. And part of the ways that you can help your mental health, if you can't stay away from a video or something that might impact you like that, or say the news right now, because no one can stay away from the news right now. You can try to, but it's not going to work. Is to, you know, check the sources, check the bias, check everything like that. Inform yourself. And, you know, that sounds like a political stump speech, but to be quite honest, so when you come across any type of content on the internet, you have to know the source. And that's not just because you want to know that it's truthful and that it's helpful. It's to know exactly how seriously you should take it, and to make sure that if, you know, it's something that you care about and something that could impact your mental health, that you're taking it with the sincerity in which it was created. And I think that's very important, especially in a heavily saturated social media world where who knows what's being posted. And then there's so many rumors, there's false stories all over, the conspiracy theories, this, that, the other thing. And this isn't just about baseball, but it could also just be about baseball when you look at all the rumors about MLB coming back, if they're having the Florida League or the Arizona League, or if they're playing in 29 stadiums or 32 or 4 or whatever. There's so much information out there, and sometimes it's good to check your sources, and sometimes it's just good for your mental health to shut it off.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
Always an option.
There is kind of, I think, another side to baseball where we've become so accustomed to it being something that we can rely on.
Right.
That it's going to be there for us in our moment of need to help us, not only because it's kind of ever present. I mean, it runs for a ridiculously long period of the year. You know,
it was considered essential during the Second World War.
Yeah.
I mean, let's talk about that. A world war could not stop baseball, but a pandemic could. That's, yeah. I mean, that's the difference right now.
If you dig hard enough, you can still find baseballs being played. And that's
absolutely
the beauty of it. You know, if people want to go that far out of their way for, you know, a little bite of something that comforts them and improves their outlook on life, that kind of reminds them of this win-lose dichotomy that you've got, where, you know, your favorite team has a chance at winning it all, then it's still out there. You just have to look. Baseball in the KBO, you know,
you can
take it for what it's worth. It's not the MLB, but it's still fun, and it brings a new flavor to baseball. So that would be my two cents for those of you that maybe are looking for a little something to take your mind off things, or just sort of get comfortable in front of the TV with your family, with your significant other, or even just by yourself. That does a great deal to sort of ease the daily grind that we're all in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been watching the CPBL. I had it in the background when I've been working. I won't lie to you, I've been enjoying it.
You got a favorite team?
There's one thing, the Guardians at the moment.
All right. I'm a Rakuten Monkeys guy myself.
See, everyone now has a new favorite team. But it's weird because I was chatting to a gent called Russell on a chat the other day, and this is going to sound ridiculous, and I'm sorry, please don't turn off. I compared baseball to wrestling, professional wrestling,
And oh, I'm me, all in on that. All in. Yeah.
For me, like, MLB is the WWE of baseball. It's when you're a kid growing up, everyone wants to play, no matter where you're from in the world, you want to play in Major League Baseball. You hear it from wrestlers in the indie scene. They want to go to WWE. Not all of them. But then you look at the different stuff. You've got your luchas in Mexico. You've got Japanese wrestling. You've got British wrestling. You've got all these different styles of wrestling. But it's still wrestling. And people like certain things. Just because you're a fan of one doesn't mean you can't like another. So you look at stuff like it's in a Dutch league or the Italian league or in Taiwan or Korea. Nicaragua as well.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a global sport, and I mean, there's nothing like the present to remind you that somehow they're playing baseball.
I know that a number of, in particular in the UK, the softball leagues, there have been a couple leagues that have just taken the step to cancel their season, and they've done that on their own. That's not coming from any overarching organization, not the British Softball Federation, not the British Baseball Federation. But they're doing it out of an abundance of caution, and it's hard to fault them. But at the same time, there's still a possibility of getting out on a field this year. It's not over until it's over. The wonderful thing is that to a certain extent, the teams can decide when it's going to be over. I mean, at this point, I think if they all had to bundle up in winter jackets to play the game, they would gladly do it. So there's still a chance, certainly, of playing the sport this year. No guarantees by any means, but just this past, just over a week ago, when right after BSUK issued their latest update on COVID-19, and unfortunately, you know, we still have the suspension of events at Farnham Park, the National Baseball Complex, out in Slough, and with our tournaments and events, we could, however, for the first time, issue guidance on how to play socially distant baseball or softball. And that was for me, putting that out there was really exciting because, you know, no, we can't get two teams of players together yet. But now, because of where the guidance is at, we have been able to come up with our official guidance on how we can play some form of the game. And you know what? Being able to have a catch with one person outside of your household could make all the difference for someone who's struggling. So that in and of itself made me, you know, very excited because there's now an official way to play some form of the sport, despite the fact that there's lockdown, semi-lockdown, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, whatever's happening is going on. Right now, there's currently a way to play catch, which is awesome.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. It's funny, Chris, you raise a good point with winter ball. I mean, a lot of the universities in the UK would happily show you what winter ball looks like in the UK.
Absolutely.
And believe me, it gets pretty icy out there and pretty dicey, to be fair.
Why is championing mental health so important to you?
Well, for me, it's that there was no voice telling me to help myself when I was younger. It was not something that was talked about. There was a long time where I was taught that you just had to toughen up. And obviously the world is changing and that stigma is changing, but it still very much exists. And in a culture of sport, in a culture that is based on showing no fear and showing no weakness, it can be very difficult to take that step and be honest, even with yourself, about mental health. So that's why it's important to me, is that your physical health, your performance on the field, your performance off the field, all depends on your mental health, and they're all very closely connected. So it doesn't matter if you are a pro athlete at the top of your game or if you play softball once a year and it's slow pitch and it's just for a tournament, it really does not matter your skill level. Mental health is important. And for me, in that particular stigma around the sports world, while it's slowly but surely changing, it's not there yet. And there's so much more that can be done. So I've been fortunate to work in a variety of sporting roles and professional sports, minor league sports, the top level of women's hockey, some would say in the world. And at each level has given me a different perspective on mental health. And because I've been in such a forward-facing role and am comfortable doing so, I wouldn't say I feel like I'm responsible to talk about it, but I have a platform. And I think that because I have that platform, because it's something that I care about, that's why I choose to champion it the way that I do. I also don't think that I know that you guys were very kind in your words about me talking about my mental health. I don't see it as a big deal for me to take that step in the positions that I've had. I understand that it's certainly not for everyone, and I'm aware of that. But I think that there's almost a responsibility that if I'm comfortable with it, then it's something good to do, and it could help someone else. And if I can help just one other person, then I've done a good thing. So there's part of it it's a little selfish, but at the same time, I just don't want people to suffer like I did because it was needless.
Yeah, I'd have to agree on all accounts there, Chris. I mean, I think that the big thing on my end is really down to when I felt that I needed help, I didn't really know where to go. I had a real ordeal with opening up to my parents and saying that, you know, it was sort of this admission of what felt like weakness on my part, that I was meant to have my life together as a university student, that I was meant to be so much more. And it felt almost humiliating that I couldn't not only perform academically, because first and foremost, I was a student, but that I was having these shortcomings playing a sport that I was truly passionate about. But it was as if the spark kind of left me. You know, there were a lot of other things going on in my life that contributed to the way that I was feeling at that point in time. And I later learned to better dissect them and talk about them. But it was a really tumultuous couple of years. And I think that by starting this website of mine, it was really me just opening up and being honest. Because for the longest time, I felt like I was kind of running away from my feelings. And I'm a fairly emotional person by most accounts. Those of you that know me, it's a bit of a struggle sometimes to put into words what I'm saying, but I do have emotional reactions to quite a few things that, you know, whether I'm watching a movie or whether I'm, you know, on the mound throwing a pitch. Sometimes I wear my emotions on my sleeve, whether for better or for worse. And I felt that really by writing about my experience first and foremost, I was doing a service and putting my voice out there in the hopes that other people would write about their ordeals and perhaps coping mechanisms with mental health.
Well said.
Yeah, very well said. The theme of mental health awareness this year in UK is kindness. Are there any tips or advice or things that we can do to be kinder to ourselves?
I mean, I think we kind of already touched on a few of them. So going from what we've said previously, and I'm just going to drop this one in there, and I guess, you know, we can kind of see where it goes, but diversity in activities has really been a big one for me. Lockdown, quarantine, I'm not going to paint it as if it's all been absolutely phenomenal for my mental health. I've had my ups and downs, as I'm sure many people that are listening to this likely have as well. But you do kind of look at the available activities. And once I find an activity that I can really get stuck into, it quickly becomes something that really helps me deal with all this time on my hands. And you try and do it productively, but for me, a big part of it has undoubtedly been baseball. Now, I live on a college campus, so I have the privilege of being outdoors for quite a bit of time. It is one of those things where I do try and spend as much time outdoors as possible. And I've been picking up a new hobby, which has been shooting around the basketball. I've been trying to work on my shot a little bit, and a couple of the individuals on campus over here will occasionally show their faces, and you'll see them outside shooting hoops as well. And every so often, one of us is there to rebound for the other person, and it really does a great deal for us because we can get our exercise in, and at the same time, we can be a little bit sociable.
From my perspective, the theme of kindness is a great one for this year, where, well, we know, you know, just when I was leaving the U.S., there were nearly 30 million people who are unemployed and struggling, and that doesn't even consider the tragic death toll of what's happening. And you can get bogged down in all those negatives, certainly. And I think it's important to acknowledge that that's happening. And that's the U.S. and in the U.K. It's certainly a similar situation, although not, fortunately, not to the same extent. But the beautiful thing about the theme of kindness is that it costs absolutely nothing to be kind. It does not matter your social situation, your economic situation, your employment situation. Anyone can be kind to someone else. And you never really know who needs an act of kindness. It could be checking in with someone on Twitter, just saying, "Hey, how are you?" It could even be something as similar as favoriting a tweet. It could be getting out of the way of someone while you're in the queue for the local Sainsbury's, or it could be donating your change on Deliveroo to the NHS. All of those things are stupidly easy to do, and all of them show kindness. And it really doesn't take much, and you never ever know who needs that little act of kindness. There were a bunch of viral stories a few years back about I think it was a police officer who was off duty who ran into someone on the Golden Gate Bridge, and they were ready to jump, and he just started talking to him. Didn't talk about, hey buddy, why are you gonna jump? Or he was just like, "Hey man, you catch the game last night? You see the weather?" And that little act of kindness, which cost that off duty cop absolutely nothing, perhaps saved a life. And please forgive me if I misquote the story, but that's the wonderful thing about kindness. And I think why it was a great theme for this year is that it doesn't matter that we're all far apart. It doesn't matter that we're all isolated, and it really doesn't matter that we're in lockdown, because kindness is something that shines through no matter what. And one of the great things about the baseball and softball community here in the UK is that you don't have to go far to find someone who's acting in a kind way or wants to help or wants to assist. I've seen a lot of posts on social media. I won't call any out that are specific, but asking and offering to help unsolicited, not necessarily responding to another person's request, although I've seen those as well. So kindness is such a wonderful theme for this year. And really, it doesn't. And one of the things that I dislike about mental health initiatives is that this is Mental Health Awareness Week, as if mental health will not be an issue next week. It was one of my big issues with the campaign in North America, the Bell Let's Talk Day, was that the next day, everyone's back to normal. Mental health does not go on a 51-week basis where it doesn't matter. And then 1 week, oh, hey, it's Mental Health Week, and everybody should care about it. So the theme of kindness for this week is great, but it doesn't need to end there either. And you can continue to be kind, and who knows, maybe one little extra step of kindness will allow you to move to something else, or it will inspire someone else to be kind. And certainly in this very weird time, the more kindness there is, the better.
For me, just acknowledging people. If I'm out and someone crosses over the road, so that we're keeping our social distancing, I'll thank them, I'll acknowledge it. thank you. People that are dropping off the shop into the house on a home delivery, I'll thank them for what they're doing, because it's not me putting myself at risk. They're sort of taking that risk for me. And it's, I like the clapping for the NHS on the Thursdays, and we do it. But while I'm clapping for the NHS, I'm clapping for the binmans, the delivery drivers, all the other unsung heroes that are out there doing the jobs and doing the work to make sure that things are still ticking over as they should at court, unacknowledged as well. And if I get the chance to meet them, then I'll let them know that I appreciate what they're doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's really, as you put, just to be able to reach out to others. And while I may not do a great job as someone that is a little bit more of a hermit by most accounts, I do try to keep up with particularly my folks and friends that are at a certain distance away from me. It does, as you know, I'm sure you can appreciate, Chris, as an expat, it does really kind of tear at you a little bit that you can't be closer to those that are family.
I mean, not to interrupt, because you're doing a great job. I couldn't say goodbye to my family because of all of this. I literally left the country without being able to say goodbye, which just tore me apart.
Yeah. And I mean, my family sort of beckoned me to come back to Germany while I still had a chance. Mm-hmm. And due to my position in work, I unfortunately told them, you know, I'm not able to, because I might be looking after high risk children that we still have to provide some sort of provision here over at the college. And, you know, while many things have since come to pass, it is one of those things where you then just need to remind yourself, I need to be as kind and considerate to them whenever I speak with them. And I need to really check in, make sure that they're all right. And we just need to share our stories, share what we've been up to. And that really does a world of good. It brightens up my day. And I'm sure that it brightens up many other people's days when they're in touch and just chat about stuff with people that they truly care about.
I've got another question for you. How are you doing? Are you okay?
Oof. But, I mean, that's a big question. You know, I was struggling for a couple of weeks. I'm going to be completely honest. It's difficult to kind of look at this in rose-tinted glasses and say that, you know, we have any understanding of where this is going to be going. But I think, like what we mentioned earlier, the permanence of it all, you know, we can't get caught up in thinking that this is going to be something that is going to exist forever. There are only so many things that we can control. I did find that just reaching out to other people, even, you know, given my mental health, did do wonders, not only for my confidence, but just my ability to think positively. You know, it's truly something that I want to impress upon everyone. There are people out there that will help, that will listen, and whether it comes in the form of a therapist or your neighbor, a family friend, or even a relative, there are people that are both happy to talk just about life or just about the simple things that are going on at the moment.
Very well said, once again.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris, would you like to share anything, or are you okay?
For me, it's been a weird month. So a month ago, I was sitting in an apartment in Farmington, Connecticut, working on my seventh flight itinerary to attempt to move over here while my visa vignette, which is the entry document, was still valid, right? And wow. While that was incredibly stressful, the beauty of moving over an ocean during a pandemic is that it is completely all-consuming and there's a shortage of stuff to do. And so while it was a lot of stress and it certainly ratcheted up my anxiety, the thing is I was able to pinpoint what was causing it at all times. Mm-hmm. And to be grounded like that was actually very useful. So it was functional stress. It was functional anxiety, you know, in the completion of a task. One thing that I think that's important to mention is that not all stress is bad and not all anxiety is bad. Mm-hmm. It can be a motivator. It can help you stay on task at certain points. And that certainly is what happened while I was trying to move over here. And while that whole process is probably a much longer story, now that things are calming down again, I'm actually having a little bit more trouble. My insomnia is much worse because I don't have anything to singularly focus on. And now the uncertainty is starting to creep in. And don't get me wrong, that doesn't mean I'm unhappy or anything. I mean, it took me for so long to get over to the UK. I've been looking to do it for over almost 6 years at this point. But because of what's going on, it should be this great relief. And instead, it's been replaced with, all right, what's coming next? How are we going to keep going? What is the world going to look like? What is my job going to look like? So the questions come up, and that uncertainty certainly is difficult. I'm fortunate that I have a support system. I'm fortunate that my support system lives with me. And I know that's not the case for everyone, but it's weird that the longer this goes on, the harder it is for me. But at the same time, the beginning of this was much easier for me just because I had something to do.
Yeah. It was kind of weird at first. Just to chime in on that front, because you've kind of feel, I mean, I was in the education sector. So for me, it was like, I've got an early Easter break.
Right.
It was a bit bizarre in that sense that you just thought, okay, great. So Easter breaks come early. I'm not quite sure how to deal with this in the long term, but I'm not really thinking about that because I've got an Easter break that is indefinite now. And now that it's dragged on, you do kind of have to set your sights on something, as you said. And just talking to people can help clear things up, what might otherwise kind of be a little bit murky. It's difficult to think truly put into words how people might feel around the world about this. Everyone's in different stages, and it's really kind of, I think if you're living with an individual, it can be quite intense. And I'm not sure whether you've noticed that at times.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, you can have the best relationship in the world and being isolated in the same house for 8 weeks will test that no matter what. Not necessarily in a bad way, but like, it's a small amount of space. You could have a huge house. It's still a small amount of space. Yeah. So, you know, it's not normal for humans to be in confined spaces for this long. It really brings into perspective zoos, for example, but I digress. So, no, I completely agree.
Yeah. And on the flip side, you know, you have individuals like me who I feel that there's this degree of isolation that is also unhealthy. So when people talk about normality and kind of getting back to a normal, I think a lot of people sort of associate it with just social norms and the ways in which you interact and go about your daily lives, the variety of people that you meet, the different activities that you partake in.
Why we're recording this podcast on Skype instead of at a pub in Manchester. Just saying.
Brilliant. Exactly. You know why Matt hasn't both sat a nice cold one in front of us and, you know, said, all right.
That he's definitely buying. I want that on audio.
That's getting edited out.
Shame. No, we'll have to hold you account at some point then.
Well, if you're willing to drive from Norwich and London up to Manchester, it's the least I could do is to buy you a beverage. Least I could do.
I feel like
notice how he said beverage, by the way.
But yeah, maybe two beers for me if
I'll get a tap sorted. I'm good. As always, I like to leave the final words open to our guests. Andreas, is there anything that you would like to talk about? Any shout outs you want to give? Anything you want to promote?
Well, it's funny you should mention that because as soon as we'd kind of been discussing whether or not we could include shout outs beforehand, there are a couple people that popped into my head. And there is one particular person that I know is doing a great job promoting mental health up in Scotland, but he's also doing it by extension through his coffee business, and that is James at Farm Boy Brews.
Yeah.
So I would encourage you to go check out Farm Boy Brews on Twitter and Instagram. I believe he also has Facebook. But he's a fantastic individual and does a fantastic job with his coffee. And it goes with each purchase. There's a small percentage that goes towards mental health causes up in Scotland. So, yeah. I mean, he does a great job. And I'd like to include a little note for him. And naturally, then I've got two more. I'd like to thank my lovely teammates at Norwich Iceni for being their usual bubbly selves on social media, and also my therapist, Catherine, who's a steady rock for me. Thank you.
Lovely. And where can we find your work? What's your website address?
My blog is athletesvoice.blog, so pretty straightforward. If I suppose I have a Twitter that I can include as well, but I presume you might be able to help me on that one there, Matt.
Yeah, it's Athlete's Voice VM Victor Mike. I'll put all the links to everybody's Twitters and web pages in the show notes too. So if we do get it wrong on air, we'll rectify it in text.
No worries.
Fantastic.
And Chris, anything you'd like to add?
The shout outs, I'd like to shout out two of my coworkers at DSUK, Nicole Napier and Joelle Watkins, who were kind enough to share videos as well for mental health, which obviously isn't the easiest thing in the world. And they're not broadcasters, so that it may not come as naturally to them, but they were willing and able to do so. Joelle's our head of commercial. And she volunteers for Samaritans, as I mentioned. I wanted to include the Samaritans number for anyone in the UK in case you just want to talk to someone, in case you're feeling alone. Their number is 116-123. It is free from any phone 24/7. If you don't want to talk on the phone, you can write Joe, J-O, at Samaritans.org. They'll respond to your email within 24 hours. So that's Joelle does that as a volunteer, which I think is fantastic. Nicole's family runs a charity called Team Daniel. And rather than going into the details, I would encourage you all to look up their information. On Twitter is at Team Daniel 2001. And on Facebook, it is... Facebook.com/, it actually has a very long title, Walk and Talk Suicide Prevention, I believe is what it is. But I wanted to plug both of them because they took the time out of their days to record the mental health videos. And I wanted to make sure that their individual causes were taken care of as well. I don't want to plug my work too much, but if you're interested in baseball and softball in the UK, follow Baseball Softball UK. It is what we do. We have some very exciting things going on. We are still in operation and will be throughout the lockdown. We have a whole game ready campaign designed to do drills at home, to talk about umpiring, to talk about safeguarding, which is very important, especially during this time. All of that is available at baseballsoftballuk.com/game ready. It's all free, and anything that you want to sign up for, you can. If not, send me a message. The best way will be on Twitter, which I know the link will be in the description, but it's at cknoblock, C-K-N-O-B-L-O-C-K, 17. My DMs are always open. I'm happy to talk. I'm happy to chat. I'm happy to provide any resources that you may need. I'm not a mental health expert. I'm just a dude who talks a lot. Sometimes that's what you need. Sometimes it's not, but I'm always happy to help.
Yeah, absolutely.
And gentlemen, that brings us to a close. Superb work. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for being so open and for sharing. Mental health is something I've struggled to talk about myself personally, to the point where I was that worried about recording this show today. I nearly cancelled it 10 minutes before recording because I was having a bit of a wobble. But isn't that really what this is about? Talking and sharing and acknowledging that it is okay not to be okay. So thank you for being so open. Thank you for giving us your time.
A pleasure.
And if I could hug you, I would, after I bought you beers.
we'll definitely need to make an issue of that. Just should the event arise, I will be there making my way up to Manchester. I know that I'm a Seattle Mariners fan. I know that they were going to host some sort of event in Manchester before the lockdown ended up hitting. So shouldn't be too far away, but we'll see where it goes.
I sure hope so. Right, gentlemen, enjoy the rest of your evening, and I'll speak to you soon. Ta-ra. And there you have it. Thank you again to Chris and Andreas for being so open, honest, and for sharing with us some great insight into mental health. And if you are struggling through this awful time, you're not alone. So please reach out to someone, or if you're worried about someone, why not take this time now to drop them a text or give them a call and check in with them. As Chris mentioned in the episode, Mental Health Awareness Week is only 7 days long, but the struggle for some continues way past the date and is a year-long event. Keep helping each other, be a good teammate, and lend an ear if you think it's needed. On the plus side, the British baseball community has been extremely active in providing us with some content to keep us active, entertained, and educated. You've got Chris from Richmond, who's been putting so much work into organising the British Baseball E-League, which has now reached its group stages. We've been treated to some online webinars and insight into the game from Will and Alan at Smarter Performance, doing throwing webinars, Chris Ward from Guildford doing training sessions, so many popular quizzes are popping up from teams, from federations and foundations. The BFF have been putting on special guest webinars, Gabor Erdos are doing his umpiring clinics, plus the British Baseball League are also producing some content too that you can sign up to on the Facebook. So what are the chances we're going to see all these amazing guest speakers and insight into the game that we love if it weren't for lockdown? So why not take full advantage of these? Keep active, keep us all in the loop, and point them out to each other if you think there'd be something that somebody would be interested in. That's it for today. Next week, we've got another special guest on for you, and hopefully I'll see you then. Until that time, take care. Ta-ra.